Hello and welcome to Podcast by the Peer, the podcast where freelance copywriters talk about all things freelancing and copywriting. Whether you're a seasoned copywriter or just dipping your toe into the world of words, pull up a deck chair and join us as we dive into the minds of some of our freelance favourites. I'm your host, Tom Davies, a freelance copywriter based in Brighton, and today I'm joined by brand voice creator, copy safari orchestrator, and Copywriters Unite instigator. It's the legend herself, Vicky Ross. Welcome to the show, Vicky.
Oh, sorry, you've thrown me because I'm so excited by what you just said. That's a lovely run of words, the power of three, and they all sound the same. How nice.
It only took 17 drafts, got there in the end. Okay, listener. So in today's episode, we're going to bulldoze past the pointless brand principles of warm, trusted, and human by discussing how to create, define, and protect a proper tone of voice. But before we unpack today's topic, Vicky, can you tell our listeners who you are and how you became a freelance copywriter?
I am Vicky and I'm a copywriter. I became a freelance copywriter unintentionally and reluctantly. I had got to head of copy in a couple of roles and found that the job was more meetings than writing, and I love writing. So I reluctantly handed in my notice at Sky, even though I loved working there and creating their voice. And they asked if they could be my first client. So I pretty much carried on working for them, but writing more, in meetings less, and having more time to myself. I did actually freak out 6 months in. I'm such a hard worker. I just wasn't used to not knowing when the next brief was going to come or the next invoice was going to be paid. And so in the middle of my freak out, I was offered a head of copy job at Expedia, and it was an offer I couldn't refuse. But within 3 weeks, I knew that I'd made a mistake just because I was in more meetings, not because nothing to do with the company or the brand, but just because I was in more meetings again and not writing. And so I stayed for a year because it was a great brand and I had a great experience and I got to travel loads. But then I went freelance, and that was about 11 years ago, and I haven't looked back.
Wow. Well, it's great to have you on the show, Vicky. And I had about 814 questions to ask you about brand tone of voice. But because we've got 30 minutes or so, we're going to tackle this topic in three sections, namely how to create, define, and then protect a tone of voice. Vicky, you've been through this process with some top shelf brands, including Sky, ITV, and IMAX. So how is it done? Where does a copywriter start when creating a brand tone of voice?
So I ask the client to send me as much information about the company as possible. It's not just a case of coming up with like adjectives that will become the principles. I need to know how the business started, why it started, what people involved think the business should be or could be. And then we have to look at the brand purpose and promise. And the brand purpose is all about what the products or services are. And then I need to know why it makes those products or offers that service. Basically, I want to know why the brand exists in the world. And I want to know who it exists next to, what category it's in, and what its competitors are saying. And I do work with big brands, like you mentioned, and I always want them to be the leader in their category. It often takes a bit of reminding with the client. They're sometimes busy looking at who else is doing what, that they forget that they could be the ones that lead the way in how they look and how they talk. And then from all of that, sometimes you kind of naturally get to a conclusion as to who and what the brand could sound like. And then I start playing with words. And I mean, you mentioned in the intro, lots of brands do say, oh, we're human, friendly, honest, warm, trusted, passionate. And like, I'm sure you are. I'm sure all these brands are. But that doesn't define a way of speaking, and it doesn't differentiate a voice from another brand. Because if every brand says that they're those things, then what makes them stand out? So I try and pull out something that's really unique to them. So most of my clients are in the entertainment business, so I'm really concerned about how much their audience loves the product, so what they offer them, and what sort of language they would expect to receive if they were reading or hearing something from that brand. And then also what typical terms come up in that area. Just to give you an example, I think it's an example of what I mean. I was asked to work on the Warner Brothers studio for Harry Potter, the Harry Potter experience when it first opened. And I said no, because I've never read a Harry Potter book or watched a Harry Potter film. And I think when you work on a brand where, you know, there are so many fans and they really love that product, you owe it to them to do the best job possible and to speak in their language. And while it's true that if you're a good copywriter, you can write about anything, you're a really great copywriter if you can live and breathe and feel the thing that your audience is in love with too. So that's what I mean by thinking about how the audience is going to expect you to speak.
That's really interesting. If we can just zoom in on those workshops for a moment, because I think for new copywriters who are still carving up their craft, you know, leading a tone of voice workshop with 18 pairs of eyeballs staring, it can be tough. It can be daunting. And some of those participants in there, they might be, let's say, like less enthusiastic than others. They might have been dragged in by their CEO and they might not be forthcoming with like vital information you need to find that voice. So with that in mind, what are some of your recommended activities or questions to ask in a tone of voice workshop that really help a copywriter get to grip with the personality of a brand?
Well, I think the first thing is to think about your own approach. Like, you can't have an ego here. This isn't about you. Like, yes, it is about you getting answers so that you can do a good job, but the end result isn't about you. This is not your voice. So as soon as you make all the attendees in your client team comfortable knowing that you're on the same side, I think that breaks down any sort of misconceptions or people not kind of believing that you're going to know what you're doing or that you're going to get it right. And rather than lead the discussion and conversation, I just try and feed that conversation and let everyone pretty much talk amongst themselves and then just make loads of notes. And they don't realize that what they're saying is helpful, but all of it is helpful. So the sorts of questions I would ask are, who do you think your brand is now? And if it could be anything, what do you wish it could be? And that could be a comparison with a competitor. But even though I said you shouldn't look to your competitors, obviously you need to be aware of what they're doing so you can leap off from them. And I asked them to think of lots of adjectives that they think would be relevant to the brand. And I say they can't be human friendly and honest. So it's a bit of a challenge because that is everyone's go-to. And also I present things like, I get people to guess which brand is talking. So I'll pick two brands from the same category, like Coke and Pepsi or McDonald's and Burger King. And I take the logos off and present a bit of copy and see if anyone can guess which one is which. And obviously they're well-known brands, so pretty much most people can guess. And then that's sort of the evidence for me to then say, well, this is what we want for your brand. We want you to speak in a way that's recognized when all other assets are removed. I always say you can't really present an argument without evidence. I know I'm so dramatic, I say it quite a lot. You need to imagine you're a lawyer and presenting a case in court. You've got to get people on your side and make them feel comfortable with you. And you can't do any of that without showing where you're coming from and where you want to go.
Awesome. You know, that those questions, they're really rich. And just when you were speaking there, it was kind of taking me back to my teaching days. I was a teacher before becoming a copywriter. And I remember my mentor saying the best lessons are ones that you facilitate, the ones where you can engage your audience and you're not just imparting information. So that's exactly what it sounds like you're doing here in these type of voice workshops.
Yeah, I always approach everything as a conversation rather than a meeting or a presentation. They brought me in to do something for them. So they need to get the result that they want and the outcome that they want. Sometimes people can't think what a brand voice is, but everyone knows what a person's voice is. So you might ask, if your brand was a person, who do you think it is? Or how would you like them to show up? Or how would you like them to speak if you could put a name to the brand? I don't really like that exercise. I don't know why. There's no reason, because it's really effective. It's just a personal thing. I prefer to think of the brand as a brand rather than a person. But about 12 years ago, when I first started at Sky, I worked on the launch of Sky Atlantic. So that's a UK TV channel that shows all the HBO shows from the US. And it needed a brand identity, obviously. And it was really sexy and like American and sort of aspirational because it's an exclusive channel to Sky. And I did a workshop with the Sky Atlantic team. And this is pretty much the only one I can talk about because it's moved on since then. Everything else, like, is still under NDA. But at the time, Mad Men had launched on the channel when the channel launched. And we just got to, after loads and loads of discussion of working out if the brand was a person, what would it like? What would it do? What would it sound like? What would it eat? What would it drink? Where would it go? How would it socialize? Is it in a relationship? I find them so weird, but I'm saying lots of people find it really helpful. And we came to the conclusion that Sky Atlantic was Don Draper in Mad Men. And so as soon as you've got a name and a character like that, that everyone that knows so well, you're able to think, not just in terms of adjectives to describe your tone of voice, but what would Don Draper say? Would Don Draper say that? Would Don Draper engage in that sort of a conversation, you know, if you're thinking about how to respond to something on social media? And then from that, because you can describe Don Draper more easily than the brand, perhaps, we were saying really rich words like Don Draper is smart and sexy and sophisticated and creative and captivating. And they're just great words to work with to then think about how you're going to write on behalf of their brand.
That's brilliant. I'm a big fan of character referencing, and I think that it can really kind of give context to something that's quite abstract for a lot of people, especially tone of voice. And I mean, like, on that note, Vicky, is there anything a copywriter can do ahead of a tone of voice workshop to better prepare participants and get them to feel more involved and engaged ahead of all of these activities?
Yeah, a good exercise is to get people to think about a brand that they like for whatever reason. So take yourself out of your professional world. We are all consumers. We do all go to shops, or we do all follow some sort of an account on social media, and we buy products for whatever reason. So to think about a brand that you might have engaged with recently, like an email newsletter that they might have sent you, or a receipt from a shop sometimes has copy. And I ask people to bring in whatever they might have noticed and to talk about why they liked it or why it got their attention. They might not have liked it, actually. And then just by getting them to think outside of the day job and then presenting back to them, you have picked all of these things for these reasons. And so I'll present back to them the objective reasons, even though their rationale for bringing in whatever they brought in is subjective. They then get to see what the results of having an effective brand identity and tone of voice can be.
Yeah, they're kind of, I guess they're proving it themselves, like how important tone of voice is. So you don't really have to do the selling at that point.
Yeah. And often in these sessions, I then get people saying, now I read everything differently, or, oh, I noticed the advert at the end of my street and I'd never noticed it before, or I really liked how that brand used that particular word, because since you said whatever it was, it's made me think about it differently. And also, speaking of words, I'm really keen on typical words and phrases for a brand. I think that's a really easy way of getting on board with your tone of voice once you have it. And so getting people to identify it as the brand speaking. So things like Disney so owns magic, although Coke and Sky try and get in there with magic. Well, Coke is like share and happiness, and Kit Kat, take a break or break. When you see those words, you just instantly connect them back to the brand. So if you've got any words like that, definitely make sure that they're in there. As I said, it's a really easy way to be on brand if you just sprinkle in your own words. Not everyone is going to write for the brand as a copywriter. They might be a marketer and they might struggle with putting a whole paragraph in the brand's tone of voice. But if they can sprinkle some of the brand's words in there, then you've kind of done a good enough job. Do you remember when Oreo tweeted during the Super Bowl about 10 years ago and they said something like, you can always dunk in the dark?
Yeah.
There was a power cut. And they did that in like 2 seconds, and they didn't have rounds and rounds of approval. They had to act in the moment, and it worked because it was a typical Oreo word, Oreo, you dunk. So they were able to do that quickly and effectively. So that's why I like words and phrases. I think they make things effective and instantly recognizable as belonging to that brand.
Can you imagine coming up with that line? I'll just retire after that. That'll be it.
Well, I read an interview with the agency that worked on it at the time, and they said, we didn't come up with it in the moment. It actually took 2 years to get there. And what they meant was they'd been living and breathing the brand for 2 years, that because they knew it so well, they were able to then put something out so quickly. And I think lots of clients want those moments and think that they can happen overnight, but they haven't been committed to the consistency of their brand voice. And you can only get away with stuff like that if you are consistent.
Yeah, amazing. Vicky, Before we move on to defining a voice, I've got one more question to ask you. It's kind of unearthing the personality stage. Is it sometimes the case that in these workshops, you get like a eureka moment where someone says something and the clouds part, the stars align, and you think, that's it, that's the voice? Or is it usually quite a lot of rigor and somewhat, I use this word loosely, but mechanical process in reaching that voice?
I think it depends. And it depends is an answer that is given so often, because in such a creative job, there's going to be so many variables and variations that each scenario is going to be different. Especially when I work with such well-known brands, so I might already have an idea of what I think they could and should be, but then I might be completely thrown and go to a client and they want to do something completely different to what we've known for like 30 years. And often it is in a workshop or a meeting or a discussion where the client will say something that will spark an idea. They don't realize that they've perhaps nailed it, but they've given me the thing that I needed to go away with. So yeah, it depends. I either come up with it, the client comes up with it, and I put it into something more, or it takes lots of working through. Like one client I've been working with for most of this year so far, I started off in one place. I had an idea in the back of my mind for another place, but I didn't think that they would get on board with that. And so it just took a few rounds for me to understand where they were coming from until I knew it was time to present the thing I'd been holding on to. And I might have ended up holding on to that forever, because we might have got to a place in the sort of upfront bit where we made it work. But yeah, we're now working with the thing that I was holding on to. And I guess it was just about timing and how the conversation evolved and what other players were up to around them that would give us the permission to stand out even more.
Right. I mean, that kind of confirms my thinking as well, is that when you're trying to shape something so abstract, you can't approach it with this uniform, one-size-fits-all process. You know, as you say, it really depends on the client and where you need to go to find that voice.
I think it depends on the day as well and how you are. Like being creative is, I'm going to sound like I'm high on my own supply or whatever, but it's a really emotional job. And it's not something that just comes out when you sit at your computer at 9 o'clock in the morning. Like it's something that happens to you at 2 in the morning, and you can't always explain it and you can't define it and you can't teach it. It's not a formula. Like, that's why it's often difficult to get things signed off too, because sometimes you can't quite give a rationale for your thinking, but it does just work. If only we could just say it's like a maths equation, you know, it's obvious, it's in black and white why this is right for you. But then I guess you need to do loads of work to back up your thinking. So that would be, you know, befores and afters and do's and don'ts in copy to see how the idea plays out. And if it is actually going to work, and if it has got legs, and how long it could possibly last for, and if it would be appropriate for every part of the brand.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll come on to that point a bit more later, actually, with a listener question I've got lined up for you. Let's move on to kind of now defining that voice. So we've gone deeper than the usual top line information we've all experienced with a tone of voice brief at one point or another. And we've got an idea of the personality of a brand. So how do we start to make sense of all that information and transpose it into the first iterations of an actual voice to show the client?
I like to make things easy, or make them feel easy. And I like everyone to feel like they can do the job too. So I try to keep everything really short, succinct and simple. I think that's just in my nature, that I'm really rubbish at writing long copy, for example. So I'll always try to come up with 3 principles rather than 5. I know every tone of voice guidelines document varies. Sometimes there are 7 principles. I just think that's too many, and it leaves things open to interpretation and doesn't quite define the voice in such a clear way. So 3 principles, I'll present the words, depending on the words and the relationship with the client and what I think their level of appreciation for what we're doing would be. I might provide a dictionary definition for them before I get into what each word means for the brand. And then I try to describe that meaning in a paragraph, because again, anything longer than that and you kind of lose your way. Having said that, I wrote the tone of voice guidelines for Nando's last year, and each principle I explained in 3 or 4 paragraphs because it just needed, well, because there were only 2 principles and they both needed unpacking quite a bit. But it wasn't unpacking it for the sake of it. It was all valuable information with lots of examples in it. But typically, I try and keep everything down to 1 paragraph and then just get straight into the do's and don'ts of that principle, because I think people learn more through the execution rather than the instruction.
Yeah, good point. With that actual writing process, when you've got all the information, is that a case of you just kind of locking yourself away, really focusing on what that looks like in just a short paragraph and going from there?
Yeah. And look, there are no shortcuts to our job. I don't just go and write 1 paragraph and I'm done. It's like, it's an exploration, I suppose. You're sort of working out this way and that and seeing how you can describe the way you want the brand to talk as quickly as possible. So everything that you put in has got to be really rich and to the point and informative and definite.
That's a brilliant answer. Once that's part of that process is done, so I've had it myself where I've written a sample for a client in what I understand to be that tone of voice, and they might kick back on that slightly. They might say, well, actually, that's not quite how we thought we'd sound. Even though you've done all of that rigor, all of that work behind the scenes, you're kind of getting challenged at that stage on what the voice actually looks like. And it can be quite hard for a copywriter as well, because you've got 2 audiences here. You've got the client who you need to get signed for. But more importantly, you need to, this voice is for their customers. So there's 2 barriers here. How do you navigate that kind of situation?
Yeah, that's tricky. And you're right. We do have 2 audiences, but we shouldn't. It should be 1 audience. The customer is the person, whoever the audience is, should be the only person that we're concerned about and that we're speaking in a way that they're going to appreciate. And the client isn't always the audience. They might think that they know the audience. They know their brand more than we do, of course. So if it doesn't feel right for the brand, we have to take on that feedback. But we, like I said before, if we can provide evidence for why we've done what we've done, we should be able to have a productive conversation. And it might be, a client doesn't always have time to do this sort of thing. But I always say, like, look at social media. It's free. It's a free focus group. I think a lot of us think that people aren't paying attention to how brands talk and what they say. But some people actively go and follow a brand on social media or sign up for their email newsletter. So they are interested in what the brand's going to say. But on social media in particular, you can have a look at a brand's tweet or Instagram post or whatever platform you're on and see what the replies are. So what people want to know more of or what words they might repeat back to the brand. And all that is really valuable in then presenting your case back to the client. Another thing, though, when you are presenting to a client, if you think that they might not get where you're coming from or why you've come up with what you've come up with, this is a bit nerdy, but it does really work in the right circumstances. I like to color code some of my writing. So I might write a paragraph and then color code it. And the colors will then represent the principle that I'm using in each sentence or word. And that really helps guide a client through why you've written what you've written.
I love that. Consider that technique stolen. I've got that.
Yeah. Awesome. Do you know what? It's really effective, but it's also really pleasing on a personal level.
Yeah. That's awesome. And what you were saying earlier as well about people noticing voice, like, I'm not the biggest fan of Ryanair at all. In fact, they once ran over my daughter's pushchair when we landed in Shannon. I really don't like them, but their voice on social media, you know, just they play up to that. They play up to the fact they're not the best airline. It just works.
Yeah. They could be so bland and just not like show up because of the negative experiences that people have had, like you just said. Or they could be really apologetic and then you don't really feel anything to them, just they're a business that keeps saying sorry. Or they could just have fun and kind of sway you, or had a really rubbish experience with them, but I still fly with them because, well, I assume it's a money choice, but also because you kind of like being with them. It's a completely different level, but I'd always say that British Airways and Virgin Atlantic are so different in character and the way they talk. I've always thought that flying with Virgin Atlantic is like flying with a fun friend, and flying with British Airways is like flying with your old strict school headmistress. And you feel it from the minute you walk on and the steward or stewardesses are greeting you. You're like, oh, God. And with the, because I fly more with BA than I do Virgin these days. But yeah, you'd be like, oh, God, I'm a bit scared of you as the headmistress come stewardess. But it's in their emails too. And the British Airways have warmed up a bit in the last 5 years, perhaps. Their emails do seem to try harder. But then you just get an email from Virgin and you're like, yeah, that's where the party's at.
That's so true. I love that example. Vicky, at the top of this discussion, I said I was not going to ask you 814 questions. I think we're at about 807 now. So I need to move on now to how you protect a tone of voice. So you've created the tone of voice for a client, but obviously as a copywriter, you're not going to be on the scene to implement that voice for every written word that flies out of the brand's door. So how do you actually protect that tone of voice? How do you make it super easy for brand's marketing or social media department, whatever it may be, to stick to that voice long after you're gone?
So I guess we have kind of covered the guidelines. Obviously, we need the guidelines, and then they need to be presented to the business. Typically, you've been brought in to do a job that senior people have bought into and approved and signed off budget for. So once the job's done, if they can then tell the company what's happened and that this is the new voice from now on, then that's a really great start. You know, if instruction comes from the top, then you're more likely to get everybody doing what you need them to do. But then there are other things like assigning an ambassador in the company, because there's not, unfortunately, there aren't always copywriters or anybody senior, like a head of copy, to manage that tone of voice and protect it. So appointing an ambassador, like a brand ambassador, is I found that person really enjoys that job, because branding is really quite a fun area in all that we do. So the ambassador would sit in on briefings, meetings and reviews, and they would be that voice for the tone of voice. So when everyone else is talking about sales forecasts and what the design's going to look like and where the logo goes, you've got someone to say, that word doesn't feel right, or we should word that differently. And then also, if they are appointed the ambassador, everyone knows that's the one person to go to for sign off and support as well. So if you're not sure what you're trying to write something yourself as a marketer, not a copywriter, you just get someone else's sort of opinion and backing. You could also do things like send a newsletter around every month or every fortnight celebrating a tone of voice, not just for your brand, but for other brands too. But I find that if somebody is celebrating when their brand has done something on brand, it encourages everyone to keep doing it. And it also shows everyone what good looks like. And it also keeps the conversation going, and it keeps tone of voice front of mind. You know, it's not just something that, oh, here's some guidelines, have a read and good luck. It's just, it shows that it's something that means something to the business and needs to be respected ongoing. But also in that newsletter, or maybe it's a Slack channel or a WhatsApp group, just share examples of what other brands are doing too. Again, it just keeps tone of voice front of mind. And we can always learn from other brands. We shouldn't always look internally. Yeah, basically keep that conversation going.
Yeah, and I guess after a while, I guess it just becomes part of the culture. And I forget the name, I'm really sorry, but I watched one of your Copy Cabana videos, and I think you had someone from Ben & Jerry's there.
Yes, Kerry Thorpe.
Yeah, and she was explaining that you're immersed by tone of voice as soon as you enter that building almost.
Yeah, her talk is fantastic, and the story is fantastic. They are what you think of them from the outside. They are on the inside. And I don't want to give away everything from the talk, because people should watch it because it's really enjoyable. But think like there's, I can't remember what the time, there's a time when anyone that's brought a dog in gets up and walks their dog around, there's white picket fences around their desk. So it looks like a Ben and Jerry's carton in the office. So they are living and breathing the brand. And actually, I do always say this, the brand has to come from within and work its way out. It can't be the other way around, because there's no consistency there, and people won't get on board with it. By people, I mean the people in the company. If they're surrounded by the brand, they'll find it easier to execute on behalf of it. If it's something that is just external, then you will always have that mindset that that's for the consumer or the audience and it's not for me. And that's where you run the risk of like having documents that have been written for an internal audience, potentially going external and being really off brand and jarring with the audience's perception of what that brand is. And I often use Netflix as an example because I think they're just brilliant at branding and tone of voice. Everything about them is on brand. Their headquarters in LA look like a multiplex cinema. The entertainment is all around them. Like you're going to show up at work and feel like I'm in a world of entertainment. Adidas are the same. I've been to two of their campuses, one in Porto and one in Nuremberg. And it's like walking onto an Olympic village. There's like running tracks and climbing walls and beach volleyball courts. And you're just in a world of sports. So you are going to be in that mindset when it comes to executing on behalf of that brand.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Yes.
It is awesome. It's also a bit like makes you feel guilty. I'm not very energetic and into exercise. So when you go to Adidas and everyone's in Adidas gear, and then you see what the potential is for them to do at lunch in their lunch break, you say, oh God, should I put my running gear? And are we going to be, are we playing tennis later?
I'll never go home. It's awesome. Vicky, if our listeners want to study some like model tone of voice brand guidelines, are there any that you would recommend that just tick all the boxes?
Yes, F1 by Reed Words and Wieden and Kennedy are just my favorite. They're so good. They're so brilliant. The upfront brand on a page bit is really tight and succinct. I keep asking my clients to be that to the point and haven't got one that's that confident yet in just saying it, going with less is more. But then the words that they use to describe the brand personality and the tone of voice are so rich and vivid and evocative. And then every word of the guidelines is on brand. That's another point. Like every word of your guidelines from the first page to the last page should be in the tone of voice. So even before you get to the actual instruction, you're in that world already. You can see the tone of voice in action. Yeah, they're excellent. So you can find them online, or I think if you search on Twitter, Vicky Ross F1, you'll see I've tweeted about them quite a bit. Sainsbury's, also UK supermarket, and they have really nice guidelines. They have two principles, lovely and lively. And the way that they explain the execution of those two principles is just really easy to grasp. And it feels very British and right for the brand. Although I think they have been updated since I've seen them, but they're still available to see online. They're lovely too. So they're the brand tone of voice guidelines I would look at. Martin Neumeyer, by the way, he wrote The Brand Gap. That's an excellent book on branding. Basically, I read this book and I was like, oh, right, that's me out of the job because it tells everyone what I do. Strong Language. I thought it was called that, but I got confused. Strong Language by Chris West. Yeah, it tells you how to do it very quickly. Copywriters write the best books, so it's really easy to read and it's brilliant.
I will link to that book and the two guidelines you mentioned in the show notes. Thanks for sharing that, Vicky. We've got to move on to listener questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. The first is from brand copywriter and host of Copywriters Unite Brighton, Joe Jeffries, who asks, when working with such huge brands, it must be hard sometimes as a solo consultant to keep things moving forward with so many different personalities and internal politics to navigate. Do you have any tips for managing relationships and getting work out the door?
Well, I think we've kind of covered a bit of that, but can I just say, Joe, it's so lovely. If you are in Brighton, please go to the next Copywriters Unite night that he'll host. He's a lovely guy. So in answer to his question, as I said, usually someone has brought you in because they want you to do that job. But of course, there are politics as you go along, unfortunately. But the more that you can give evidence for why you have created what you've created, the better. And also dazzle people with science, like give them strong rationale. So check out System One and Richard Shotton's posts for facts and figures. The people that we're often up against are the business people and the money people. So it's not good enough to just say, oh, I created your tone of voice because I thought it would be warm and nice and that your audience would like it. They want to know why speaking in a different way is going to make a difference to their business. Present everything. I know we're not always there when we're freelancers. We can't present things ourselves. Often it's our direct contact that's presenting something on our behalf. So as many speaker notes as you can give them as if you were presenting is really helpful to them.
So to summarize, you're saying prove what you're presenting where you can with science and studies and the Choice Factory book there. I think you mentioned there is such a brilliant book, things like that.
Yeah. And then in system one, they're always analyzing ads and they're using things, they're measuring like emotion and responses. And if you can say, oh, I've, you know, created a tone of voice that would appeal to your audience on a more emotional level, and system one has measured blah, 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 or a 55% increase of emotional reaction. This is not my area to speak in this way, but that sort of thing will show whoever you've got an issue with that you haven't just gone away and drawn something and had a lovely time, that there is method in the madness and a reason for everything.
Love it. Love it. Another listener question for you. This one's from conversion copywriter Will Life, who asks, have you got any tips or strategies to help copywriters manage their time on big tone of voice projects?
Short answer is no. Will Life, that's a good name. Everyone's different. I can't say how to manage your time. I can say how I manage my time, and that is I have to write loads of lists, like a to-do list, sometimes down to such a minute level. Like on Monday, I will write the principles, the paragraphs for each principle. Then I'll leave it. And on Tuesday, I'll review them with a fresh mind. And then on Wednesday, I'll think of typical words and phrases I can sprinkle in there. So yeah, as I say, everyone's different. Everyone's process is different. And I think also everyone's process changes depend by project too. So I'm sorry, I can't say. But for me, I'm not analytical. I'm not methodical. I am more creative. So I do have to write myself instructions.
Oh, yeah, I'm exactly the same. You can't beat a good list. That's what,
Well, and also ticking off something on a list is such a dopamine hit.
You're right. Okay, Vicky, we've reached the feature round. Name that attraction.
I forgot about this bit.
With every guest, we ask them to come up with a name and strapline for a new attraction coming to Brighton Pier. All fictional, of course. Vicky, my previous guest, Emma Cownley, has set your attraction task, which is to come up with a name and strapline for a ghost train. Very on brand for Emma.
I was going to say, of course she has. This is so on brand for her.
So what have you got for us?
I don't know if this is anything to be proud of, but I thought I'd keep the name simple. So the Coast Ghost Train.
Ooh.
That's very kind of you to react like that. I do like words that sound the same. I do it too much, if I'm honest. So yeah, that's the name. And then keeping with words that sound the same, Fright and Fear on Brighton Pier.
Oh, like that. Just write that down. I like that.
Thanks.
Awesome. You can't argue with a bit of alliteration. I think it's, yeah, I love that. They're going to have to start commissioning some of these ideas from copywriters. We've had some great suggestions so far.
Well, yeah, you can be the ambassador for Brighton Attractions and go armed with all these ideas and then get us down for like board meetings and parties.
There you go, people. The Coast Ghost. I like it. And Vicky, whilst you're here, would you like to set the new attraction task for my next guest, Ellen Kate Boyle from Content by the Sea?
Yeah, I wish I could think of something as on brand as what Emma came up with, but I don't know what my brand is, I suppose. I'm so busy creating a brand for others. I never think about who or what I am. But anyway, I thought let's keep it happy and uplifting and go with a carousel or a, you know, the merry-go-round.
Like it. We'll go from the coast to the ghost to the carousel. There you go, Ellen. Your homework is set. Awesome. Thanks so much, Vicky. And Vicky, if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
I'm usually banging on about branding, tone of voice and copywriting on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Yeah, I know. And if you're not following Vicky, what you do with people, go and follow Vicky. Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me, Vicky. And if you found this episode useful, do consider leaving a review for the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want to join me for a chinwag about freelancing or copywriting, do drop me a line at coastalcopy.co.uk, and I'll see you next time on Podcast by the Pier. This episode of Podcast by the Pier is sponsored by Seven Sellers based in Brighton. If you've had a tough week and fancy a quiet night in with a bottle of your favourite tipple, then head over to sevensellers.co.uk. Not only will you find the biggest national wine and spirits range in the whole of Brighton, but you can also shop mead, non-alcoholic beverages, tasty nibbles, and even a whole range of liquor for those make-at-home cocktails. If that's not enough to get you gasping, Seven Cellars are also offering free delivery within the UK on any purchases made through their website with the discount code PODCAST. So what are you waiting for? Head over to sevencellars.co.uk and I'll see you next time on Podcast by the Pier.